station wagon filled with a wife and three kids. To his right, Stinker saw a half-dead gentleman in a business suit who looked to be on his way to work.
Suckers. Nothing but straight-laced, caged suckers.
Stinker was in heaven, practically home free. Or almost.
Wondering if we have time for a quick detour?
Boner asked suddenly over the CB. Gwyneth looked to Stinker.
No way.
Her expression seemed to say.
Let us just get to Washington already and deliver this darn beer to the president. No more adventures for this fancy girl.
What you got in mind, old boy?
Asked Stinker, ignoring Gwyneth's look.
A quick visit to the orphanage. We drop off and bolt.
I like that,
said Stinker, grinning.
We hand out the giggle items at Cryland for the short and smack on down the road. Come back.
See you there, good buddy. 10 in the wind. Brevity breaky break on the 6-9.
He cut off.
Are we headed to an orphanage?
Asked Gwyneth, who wasn't quite fluent in the language of high-end CB communication.
Always try to,
said Stinker, as if it was no big deal. As if every heroic warrior on I-95 took time out of hauling beer to provide very cheap toys to sad, forgotten orphan children for very small tax write-offs. Gwyneth began to cry. She had never met anyone quite like this mysterious southern beast. Raw, but tender. Ignorant in world matters, and yet brilliant when it came to useless CB lingo. Harry, without officially needing medical intervention. Possibly deranged in a very masculine 1970s way. Arrested frequently, but never officially convicted with a felony.
I do think I love you,
said Gwyneth, tenderly touching the back of Stinker's head. Laughed Stinker. His laugh was very distinctive. It would have sounded strange coming from just about anyone else but a man who owned a camouflaged carpal tunnel splint.
You really think you can tame this wild coon?
Asked Stinker. He was talking about himself.
Never fell in love with a raccoon before,
said Gwyneth, impishly. Her eyes twinkled. She was now double parked in his erogenous zone.
Let alone a wild one.
Stinker pulled over to the side of the road. He had urgent business to handle in the woods, and it involved Gwyneth. He grabbed his slot machine gloves. Gwyneth followed. It was impossible not to. Chapter 30. Kiss Off. The little man and his sheriff daddy were still awkwardly propped by the side of a South Carolina road. It didn't take long for a brave trucker to arrive to douse them both with glue. A few minutes later, another brave trucker arrived to tar and feather them. The two flatfoots became an emblem for all the hatred the great working white men in this wondrous county had been experiencing over the past decade. The little man spat out a feather and said, The big sheriff daddy spat out an even bigger feather and responded with the equally nonsensical, Within the next few hours, plenty of other truckers and looky-loos arrived. By that evening, both the sheriff and the little man were made to resemble two members of a popular rock and roll group far more famous for their makeup and tongue size than for their awful, screechy music. Tourists took photos. Children threw trash. A stew bum named Tic Tac urinated against a fence post and passed out. A toothy Japanese television crew arrived and began to nod and giggle and cover their mouths whenever they found anything amusing, which was predictably often. It was all very funny. The Americans on one side doing their North American thing, the Japanese on the other catching it all on film, laughing like crazy. Charlie off the wall, ding dong. Chapter 31. Where are they? All of the Christmas toys and boxes had been wrapped. There were seemingly hundreds of gifts, all stacked neatly to form a giant pyramid in the orphanage's grand foyer. There was just one problem. There were no orphans.
What gives?
Sputtered Jumbo, upset. The fat man loved his kids, and, for the most part, they loved him back. Except for that one child, the diabetic one he never talked about. That kid from Indiana, a state he was no longer allowed to travel through or even fly over.
Don't know,
replied Stinker.
Usually the obnoxious whelps wait for Boner and I, and then Mr. Walsh, the owner of this orphanage, he's usually right here. This don't smell right.
It really didn't. And this time, you couldn't blame the odor on Jumbo, or his secret fold that now stunk like raccoon gravy that had roped in the heat. Just then, from out of one of the grand entrances, walked a man Stinker didn't recognize.
Hello!
Said the man. Instantly, Stinker didn't trust him immediately.
Hello!
Repeated the man, smoking a long cigar.
My name is Jeremiah Moses King, and I'm the new owner of this here beautiful orphanage.
What happened to Mr. Walsh?
Asked Boner.
And the kids?
Added Jumbo, concerned.
They'll be looked after just fine,
said the man, not concerned, puffing away.
Cuban. Just has to be a Cuban.
Gwyneth stepped forward.
Sir, I am a mathematician.
The man looked at her as if to imply, yeah, right.
And what you are now telling me does not really compute.
Stinker smiled. This dewy-eyed doe was going to long outlast this year's beaver hunting season. No need to throw her back into Poon Pond.
She was a keeper.
And why is that, little lady?
Asked the man with the long cigar.
I will tell you why,
exclaimed Gwyneth with great confidence.
Because if the kids are truly okay, then why are all of their little shoes still here?
She pointed to the corner. Sure enough, there, in the corner of the orphanage's grand foyer, was a pile of children's shoes. There had to be well over 200. Stinker felt a cold electric current course down his macho spine.
Gwyneth is right. Something is truly off.
And it wasn't just that he still didn't understand what Gwyneth had said earlier about computing. Jeremiah King's smile faded. He paused.
Trying to think of a fib?
Ejaculated Boner. The smile returned.
Because I bought all of these fancy shoes just after the kids left.
Boner looked over to Stinker. The man was obviously lying. But how to prove it?
Have to hit the head,
announced Boner suddenly. He was using a military term for bathroom. Boner had never been in the military, but he found it cool to pretend otherwise.
What are the coordinates?
Asked Boner, all military-like. Boner loved stories about POWs stuck for years and years inside bamboo cages.
Down the hall to the left.
You want
to
join me?
Asked Boner to Stinker.
You too, funny.
About as funny as Bigfoot in a leisure suit,
replied Stinker, grinning. Jeremiah didn't laugh. His Bigfoot IQ was in the low range. Jeremiah turned around and then got down on one knee. He leaned toward Buck, eye to eye.
Hey there, kiddo. How are you?
Buck hissed. Stinker had never before seen this type of reaction from the kid. A lot of other crazy reactions, especially around bath time, but nothing like this. Jeremiah stood back up. You could tell he wasn't so great with children by the way he almost burned out Buck's eyeballs with his lit cigar.
Anyway, kids are all fine, and I thank you for stopping by with their Christmas presents. They will be enjoyed very much.
Stinker wasn't buying it. It was garbage. Stinker never purchased garbage. Except once. But in his defense, he had been plenty whiffy off indoor paint fumes.
Where are they?
Who?
This man was not good at playing dumb.
The kids, goddammit!
Yelled Stinker, who rarely yelled, especially within an orphanage. As Jeremiah was about to answer, he was cut short by Boner, calling from the other room.
Think I found him! Get in here, quick!
Stinker and Gwyneth went running. What they saw next stunned them. Stunned them beyond belief. All of the orphans were crammed shoeless into a small room, blinking back against the bright light now pouring in thanks to Boner having opened the door. With his arms around to protect them, Mr. Walsh also squinted back with fear.
Oh, thank God,
said Mr. Walsh.
Boner and Stinker, if it wasn't for you, I think we'd all be dead.
Boner nodded. The guy had a point.
Got him!
Yelled Jumbo from the foyer. Stinker and Boner and Gwyneth ran back into the foyer and found Jumbo sitting on Jeremiah King. The cigar-smoking man wasn't going anywhere.
Get off me, you big loud!
Screamed the man.
Give me some rope, Stink!
Declared Jumbo. Although not great at taking orders from those who were fatter, Stinker did as he was told. The man with the cigar was soon tied tighter than a rodeo clown just out on parole.
You're a hero, Jumbo. You're a damn fool and you're way too fat, but you're a hero.
Jumbo blushed. It was all true.
Finally earned your keep, big boy,
said Boner, slapping Jumbo on his ample, fleshy back.
I apologize for ever thinking what I thought about you earlier.
What'd you think earlier?
Oh, you know, nothing that was too bad,
Boner replied, and everyone laughed. While they were laughing, Jumbo looked sad, but brightened quickly when a just-freed orphan approached, clutching a large candy cane. Jumbo and the child went off to the corner to mingle. The rest of the pink-cheeked orphans surrounded Stinker and Boner and Gwyneth and began their story. The story they told was absolutely incredible. Chapter 32. Did I just hear right? The story was over. It had to do with Jeremiah wanting to tear the orphanage down in order to build a huge roller skating rink.
A roller skating rink?
Jumbo had asked. The thought of Jumbo on roller skates was both adorable and a bit horrifying.
A roller skating rink,
confirmed Mr. Walsh.
Can you believe that? With disco music.
Incredible,
farnicated Boner, who hated disco music more than just about anything, including homosexual urbanites who danced to that type of slinky, frictionless music that lasted way beyond necessary.
But we're not out of the woods just yet,
said Mr. Walsh, watching Jeremiah being led away by the police.
If we don't come up with $25,000 by Christmas, we will surely be shut down for good. We tried earning it ourselves, but it was impossible. We tried everything. Bake sales, car washes.
Mr. Walsh trailed off. He seemed tired.
We even contemplated having the children earn extra cash by doing some cleaning over at the Mulligan Street halfway house. But
he didn't finish. It wasn't necessary. Just the thought of his orphans being forced to clean an above-ground plastic hot tub filled with sex infections made everyone a bit sick. Boner and Stinker looked at each other. There was an unspoken communication between these two. They were like two wild dingoes noticing each other on the Austrian outback from a great distance, who knew instantly, without any doubt, that they both very much wanted to smell each other's undercarriages. There was only one thing to do. Stinker spoke first.
Mr. Walsh, I've been coming here for many years now. I first met the orphans when they were children. Most are now grown. Hell, I probably even unknowingly slept with a few.
He stopped for the laugh. When none came, he continued.
But there are probably many thousands out there now, lining the roads, streaking nude while wearing a red, white, and blue Uncle Sam top hat. I see the goodness you've done. And because of that, I feel that I have no choice.
Peace now. No way in the world. Well, that man is cheaper than a rabbi on vacation.
But to give $2,000 to your orphanage, that'll at least get you started.
What?
Said Mr. Walsh, not quite believing it.
Did I just...
Get on with it already.
Here, right?
Mr. Walsh finished at last.
Not now. I can't afford it now. When I return from Washington after having completed my mission, you can have it then. If I complete my mission. And if I return from Washington. And if I'm paid in cash. Or paid at all. Then.
The tears flowed freely down Mr. Walsh's cheeks. He, like everyone else in the country, no, the universe, had been religiously watching the news each and every night. That a man this brave and cheap could offer such a ridiculously generous offer, even if it was a worthless IOU not close to anything that would truly help, was beyond the realm of anything that Mr. Walsh had ever heard or witnessed, including his own very recent kidnapping.
I don't know what to say,
spurted Mr. Walsh. In the corner, Buck, softly at first, and then more loudly, began to chant.
What's he saying?
Asked Jumbo, turning away from his new orphan friend and still eagerly sucking on his candy cane, now down to just a nub.
I don't know if I heard this one before.
It took everyone a few listens, but it soon became apparent.
Can't be. Just can't.
I think it is,
said Gwyneth.
I think this is really happening.
Stinker listened even more closely. There was no doubt.
Could there be any doubt at all?
No. The kid was actually saying it. And what
Love.
Buck was saying was the following.
Love!
And then again.
Love!
And then one more time, even louder, crystal clear.
Love!
Gwyneth was beside herself with joy.
He's not cursing anymore. Buck is talking only about love.
Well, I'll be damned,
said Boner, taking off his cowboy hat and slapping it against his thigh. He did this whenever excited or arrested.
Stinker, you broke him. You broke that lame feral creature, but good.
Stinker was a bit more circumcised than his friends.
I reckon I didn't do nothing but teach him about the real world. A world where there are no Jews or Negroes or Italians or Octoroons or Honkies or half-breeds or Injuns. They're only people. People just like you and I who want to do good and ride the straight and arrow. As opposed to those who are bad, who tussle in the mud that's filled with the toxic hate that's still crawling within them. That's all. That's all I reckon I've done.
Stinker had impressed himself with the depth of his own speech, even though he himself had tuned out midway through.
It really is about love,
said Boner, spreading his arms out wide.
I heard all about love from the original trucker in that good old book of his. Hell, if that big dog himself had a CB radio, he'd still be talking about it.
Boner grinned playfully. Mr. Walsh stepped forward and whispered something in Stinker's ear. Stinker nodded sadly. After a pause to collect himself, Stinker announced,
Mr. Walsh thinks it might be best to leave Buck here with kids his own age.
Stinker was doing his very utmost to try to keep it together, but it wasn't easy.
Hey, kid. You okay with that?
Buck finally looked up.
Love.
That settles it. You ain't going nowhere. You staying right here. I brought you out of the mountains to break it. My job is now done. But boy, you better not go drinking a bowl of champagne. Leave a little for your old man.
Buck smiled. He would never forget what Stinker had done for him. Namely, getting him hooked on booze at a very young age. The kid said again. Stinker rolled his eyes. He was grown a wee bit tired of the word love. How many goddamn times could he hear it already? It really was time to leave this shithole and bring this amazing adventure to a colossal close. Time to magic. Chapter 33, The DSC Slog. Founded sometime in the 1800s, Washington, D.C. was, and still is, a swamp. Everyone knows it, even those who choose to live in it. President John Kennedy once said something funny about the city being more northern than southern and more southern than northern, but as was often the case with Kennedy, the quote was never written down, so no one knows exactly what was said. Regardless, Washington is a city filled with mean men who don't look like our boy Stinker. That is, hard-working blue-collars who can easily accomplish manly acts of heroism with their own calloused hands. Those who might not know the best word to use before a Supreme Court bailiff, but who are extremely adept at changing the oil in their three-wheeled golf carts with balloon tires, or who are more than capable of hanging a hilarious no-dumping sign above the toilet, or who can easily steal a chimpanzee from a circus and get away with it, at least for a few months. Washington is a city that does not exactly welcome men like Stinker with open arms and fancy placemats, or jumbos, or rascals, and yes, even boners. But Stinker didn't play that game. He played by his own rules. Rules that were now going to allow him to take this half-northern, half-southern city by storm. To take control. To make it his own. With all this in mind, Stinker and Boner were parked just outside the White House gates, engines revving. Stinker walked over to a payphone, slipping 20 cents into the slot, two nickels and a dime. Stinker waited for the operator to pick up. One eventually did.
Washington, D.C., may I help you?
In his best southern, no way in the hell will she ever be able to resist this adorable, cottoned, honeyed voice, Stinker soothed.
Hello, little lady. This here be the Stinker. I'm thinking right now there might just be a lightning bug flashing Dixie. You've heard of me and my exploits?
The operator, no stranger to dealing with the world famous, responded with,
maybe.
Stinker liked a challenge.
I think you're playing coy.
Maybe I am then.
I think you know who I want to talk with.
Whom?
The president,
said Stinker, growing impatient.
And you want me to patch you straight through?
Asked the operator, just as impatient.
I do, indeed,
said Stinker, stroking his stash, literally dripping in this horrifying summer humidity.
This was hell itself. And Georgia summers were supposed to be the worst.
And what makes you think that I patch through every yokel who wants to speak with the president?
Stinker was growing frustrated. He liked this operator's spunk, but not her intelligence. He hadn't envisioned it ending like this.
I don't think you understand,
said Stinker, trying to be patient.
I am on a mission to deliver to the president a six-pack of Schlitz, and I have to do so before tonight.
That's so.
That's so,
answered Stinker, at last fed up.
That's so,
the operator replied, and hung up.
Must be a lesbian.
He made his way back over to Miss Becky. Gwyneth was growing impatient.
Are we going to meet the president or what?
What lip? Women and their nerve storms. Maybe this relationship wasn't going to work out after all.
I said we would, and we will.
Could I get a goddamn break here or what?
He grabbed the CB mic and keyed it three times, the signal for Boner, only a few yards away, back in his truck, to pick up, which he did.
Got no other choice here, Bones. Let's break down them there gates.
Not enough backup,
said Boner.
Just I and you, brother. We'd need a lot more than that.
Stinker thought about arguing, but then looked at the guards manning the gates. They did not look like they were fooling around. In fact, they looked as if they just might be crazy enough to shoot innocent, hard-working, white, real Americans.
I'm at a loss here,
started Stinker, but then stopped. Was he hallucinating?
Am I hallucinating?
Asked Stinker into the mic.
No, sir, you ain't hallucinating. You most definitely ain't hallucinating.
It was incredible. In the distance, from just over the marbled horizon, a fleet of semi-trailer trucks was rumbling their badass way straight to the White House. It was a blue-collar working man army, 10,000 strong, or 20,000. It was Denim Revolution time, and it was glorious. Chapter 34, Down It Comes. The wrought iron gates came down quickly. It was virtually impossible to stop a semi from ever doing what it wanted to do. No, what it needed to do. The White House soldiers, who had never seen real action, fired their guns uselessly in the air as a sort of warning, but then quickly fled. They were little match for this band of Southern Road bandits, and they knew it. Scampering off into the night, they would end up out of work, but at least they were alive. Lucky. Jumbo screamed with delight. He was on the White House grounds. He wondered if the place had a good cafeteria with plentiful hot chocolate enemas. Boner pulled the cord for his truck's horn. He launched into yet another character, one he was particularly infamous for among his friends and probation officers, the crazed weatherman.
I think the forecast calls for violence. And I do believe it's going to be storming up some serious boner and stinker,
he announced in his best jarring northeastern accent. Jumbo pumped his chubby fists. He still felt good about pulling his excess weight back at the orphanage. Maybe he wasn't a fat, worthless toad after all. Boner's truck came to a hard stop in front of the main door to the White House, where so many of the world's important leaders had grandly entered over the years. Now here came perhaps the finest leader of them all, Stinker, along with his frayed crew of ragtag southern dingleberries. Boner exited the truck and joined Stinker and Gwyneth in front of Miss Becky. All three confidently walked directly into the White House as if they owned the place. In a way, they already did. Chapter 35, Government Weakness.
May I be of any help?
Asked an officious-looking man in a foreign suit with thin and effeminate lapels. Boner had seen this type before, and knew how to deal with it.
Affirmatory,
Boner replied confidently.
We are here to see the President of the United States. We are here to hand over to the President Schlitz.
Stinker held up the six-pack of Schlitz still bundled in its fancy gift wrap, but now out of its cardboard diaper box.
I'm impressed. Really, I am,
announced the government official.
This is a beautiful six-pack, and Schlitz, my absolute favorite.
Stinker seriously doubted this guy ever drank beer, let alone Schlitz. Looked more like a wine guy. A wine spritzer guy.
But I'm afraid,
the man continued,
that the president isn't here. So I will have to accept this most gracious gift on his behalf.
Where is he?
Asked Stinker, patience running thin.
No way in hell am I just handing over this precious cargo to a worthless paper-shuffling jack-off Democrat.
At the ballpark,
the toady announced.
About to throw out the first pitch at the annual All-Star Game.
Jumbo went into a full wind-up and pretended to throw a fastball. He practically fell on his chubby face. It was funny. The worthless bureaucrat continued,
if you'll allow me, I can certainly take charge of this here old six-pack and make sure that the president most definitely do receive it.
The man was trying without much success to speak Southern. In D.C., you are either wonky or honky. It was clear on which side of the chicken fence this idiot fell.
Not happening,
said Stinker, making the motion for his minions to do an about-face and drive on back through the White House's entrance.
Ain't buying into any of your Buddhist jiu-jitsu bullshit.
Are you sure? You could just simply hand it over.
And no one would ever see it again,
said Stinker. He hopped into Miss Becky.
I may be a backwoods Billy Bobble-Dobble, but I ain't stupid.
Stinker declared as he revved the trans's engine and squealed her around the White House's circular driveway, leaving tracks.
Had that ever been done before?
Stinker Jr. would one day read about it and be incredibly impressed. That is, if there was a Stinker Jr., and if the kid dug history and could read. Stinker noticed in his rear view that the president's pathetic assistant was shaking his tiny fists in impotent frustration. It'd be a long day in hell before anyone could pull one over on the Stinker.
Those fragile fists never saw a tough job in their lives.
Stinker got back on the mic.
My fellow truckers, until I return, I need me some brave Apaches to guard the big house. Come back, come back. Who's got the jewels colossal enough?
Said a voice over the CB's speaker.
Who might that be?
This here Nasty Sam. And for the Stinker, anything.
As would I.
As would I, too.
The voices were now coming in fast and furious.
As would I. As would I.
As would I.
Thousands strong, each enunciating a different word, but essentially saying the same thing. That the revolution could not be stopped, would not be stopped. Especially by a college-educated, European-dressed, government-sponsored ninny who drank woman wine and who shook feeble fists at an unmovable blue-collar force.
10-10 till we do it again. We're down and gone. So long, comrades.
Stinker was talking to his army.
Pooty Stank. Mellow hello. Big brown. Catnip. Shot.
Master Bang Bang.
Dr. Twitch. Shazam.
And yes, even a lone female.
Miss Sprinkles. Dot Dynamo Extreme.
Unmovable. Strong. Unified. It was magnificent. Chapter 36, Straight Shot. Stinker had a straight run to the stadium. His fellow truckers made sure of that. It was like a private road that only Stinker could use, buttressed on either side by thousands of trucks blocking the way. Stinker felt as if he was finally in paradise.
If this ain't heaven, please don't show me hell,
he thought. He giggled in that strange way of his. He couldn't help it. He was irresistible, especially to himself. He gave himself a mental handshake. The grip was strong. Without traffic, the ride took no more than 30 minutes. As Stinker passed each truck, a horn would sound, a continuous, victorious bleating that lifted Stinker's spirits as he made his way toward what he could only assume would be the toughest part of the entire mission.
Was the president going to be cool or a shithead? A stand-up, regular guy? Or a Gucci-wearing ass who only ate French onion soup with croutons?
Stinker had a pretty good idea that this was far from a sure thing. But he also knew that in many ways he'd been preparing for this particular challenge his entire damn life. All of those illegal beer runs across state borders. All of those seemingly impossible missions for the big man. Like that time delivering pop rocks to legless Vietnam vets for Christmas. Unfortunately, the vets also tended to be toothless. All those endless nights spent dreaming of one day delivering metallic-tasting subpar yeast water to world leaders for seemingly and apparently no good reason. But it didn't matter. It was finally happening.
Pinch me,
thought Stinker.
Look!
Shouted Gwyneth, pointing to the sky.
A man in a hang glider!
Stinker looked skyward. Sure enough, floating above them all was a bearded man without a shirt and wearing very loose cotton track shorts. He was giving Stinker the thumbs up. Stinker shot one back.
Wait, that's not a thumbs up,
said Stinker. Gwyneth blushed.
That was most definitely not a thumbs up.
Just a very loose pair of shorts. Stinker pulled up to the entrance of the ballpark and hopped out. Gwyneth followed, throwing Stinker a nasty look for not opening her door. Stinker caught the look and wasn't happy.
This really might not work out after all. What a pain in the goddamn ass. Plus, she's really starting to show all of her 30 years. Ridden hard and put away wet.
A security guard was waiting for them.
Ain't gonna happen,
the guard said before they even approached.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me,
replied Stinker, exhausted from all of the no's and none of the yes, Stinker, follow me's.
Just ain't gonna happen, not through this entrance or any entrance. You will not walk into this stadium to meet the president.
Stinker pulled back his fist as if to punch this loser, but was stopped at the last second by Gwyneth. She made a motion with her head.
Follow me.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Stinker motioned back.
Just follow me.
Woman, are you sure?
As sure as I'll ever be.
But are you sure?
I'm tired of motioning.
Gwyneth motioned.
Can we stop it?
Stinker motioned.
Yeah.
Away from the guard, Stinker asked.
What gives?
He just told us that we can't walk into the stadium. Isn't that right?
So?
Said Stinker, not following.
So? There's another way.
Gwyneth looked up. Stinker followed her gaze. And there was. Chapter 37. And Away We Go. Rascal was calm. Oh, was she calm. Stinker had never seen the old girl so calm. If chimps smoked, if chimps were like 12-year-old mountain boys, she'd be sucking back on a Pall Mall right about now. The look in her eyes was complacent. Not a care in the world. Bring it on. That is, until the hang-gliding helmet was forced onto her head and she was strapped into the flying contraption fashioned from out of laminated fabric and flimsy stainless steel.
Now, everything's gonna be all right, girl,
said Stinker, trying his best to project calm.
Just fly on down from the top of this here stadium, hand the president this six-pack, okay? And then run off, real fast-like. I'll be waiting for you up here.
Rascal looked sadly at Stinker.
And then you can see your pal old Joe. That's what you want, right?
Rascal didn't say a word, but she did allow for a big, sloppy hug from Jumbo. The gang was standing on the roof of the baseball stadium. They'd climbed up with the help of a hidden, unused fire escape Gwyneth had located by paying $10 to a middle-aged usher named Benny. To Gwyneth, Benny had looked a couple bubbles off plumb.
Rascal?
Said Gwyneth soothingly.
I promise that when all this is over, I will make you whatever dessert you want. Coconut cream pie, banana cream pie.
Rascal said nothing, but she didn't argue. Banana cream did sound mighty good, even if she wasn't so hot on digesting lactose, gave Rascal the staggers. Rascal was already strapped into the hang glider. The bearded man who owned the contraption stood off just to the side, counting the cash Boner had paid him. $15 in singles. His shorts were still very loose, but he was no longer flashing a thumbs up, which Gwyneth was grateful for. It now looked more like the curse finger.
Anything I should tell her?
Asked Boner to the man.
Any advice?
Just don't die,
said the man.
Really, the fall ain't too bad. Till you hit the ground.
A comedian,
mumbled Stinker.
Everyone's a comedian.
And then, with more pep in his voice, Stinker said,
Okay, Rascal, we all set now?
Rascal's helmet was all askew. She looked silly. Stinker handed the girl the Schlitz. Rascal grabbed at it absentmindedly. Boner thought,
If this jungle wench had any g-damn idea of how much this six-pack of Schlitz is worth...
Listen,
said Stinker, placing a red jacket vest on Rascal.
Take this if it'll make you feel better. You can wear it. It's my good luck puffer vest.
Stinker zipped it up and then patted the chimp's strong back for good measure.
We'll keep you warm during the fall.
With that, Stinker gently pushed Rascal off the roof. Rascal whimpered and let out a horrified cry. Stinker looked down to see whatever fate might befall this chimp. This troubled creature he loved more than practically any other female primate in the world. He put her chances at half and half. Not bad. Chapter 38. First Pitch.
Ladies and gentlemen, with
Would y'all please rise and welcome to the field the President of the United States. Mr. President will be throwing out the ceremonial first pitch.
To Stinker and the rest of the gang, this announcement sounded no better than a series of echoes. But Stinker got the idea. He could see, barely, the president striding confidently to the pitching mound, and with his fancy dress shoes, digging into the dirt like a real baseball player. He started his exaggerated wind-up and went to release the ball. But there was an audible gasp from the crowd, and thousands of fingers were quickly pointing skyward. The president finished his wind-up and hurled the ball towards the plate. It did not make it, bouncing well before the catcher, who was also looking skyward. The catcher scooped up the ball and ran back to the president. The president was only now noticing a screaming and blaring chimp strapped into a hang glider, wearing a dented and used helmet, flying directly at him with great speed. To the president's expert eyes, it did not appear as if the animal knew how to control a hang glider. Somewhere between Georgia and Washington, D.C., Clarence McLeod sat alone on his leather throne, on the top floor of the tallest building south of the Mason-Dixon, observing all of this, live, for crying out loud, on his brand-new 85-inch black-and-white deep-set television.
Was that a goddamn monkey flying a hang glider? Where in the hell is Orville? Please, dear Lord, I'm not a begging man, but I am begging with you today. I beseech you to never allow that six-pack of Schlitz to reach the hands of the President of the United States.
Clarence then leaned forward.
Did I just use the word beseech?
Meanwhile, back on the baseball diamond, the President stared slack-jawed at what he saw approaching rapidly from above. The man had seen a lot in his 50-odd years. Things on a Navy battleship, typically in the boiler room, that they never talked about in recruitment pitches. Blights that decimated millions of dollars worth of runner peanuts and other priceless legumes. An alcoholic brother with a penchant for stripping nude and using a neighbor's trampoline without permission. But this? No, he had never seen anything quite like this. What goes on inside the mind of a president of the United States? No one knows, not even the presidential experts. Maybe not even the presidents themselves. But perhaps it goes something like this.
President going to die. President killed by chimp strapped into hang glider. Chimp holding six-pack of beer. Why?
From way up above, looking down, Stinker could see that the chimp was directly on course, heading straight for the president. But way, way too quickly. Perhaps he shouldn't have pushed that damn hang glider off the stadium roof with such force. Or at all. Jumbo, Boner, and Gwyneth were leaning over the edge of the stadium, watching intently. Jumbo was rocking nervously. Boner was praying. Gwyneth, of course, was crying. So much hinged on what happened next. And what happened next, no one could have ever predicted. Not even one of those mythical one-eyed gypsies with an uncanny second eye. Chapter 39, Second Thoughts. The first to react on the field was not the President of the United States, but rather the Secret Service men who had been trained for just such a circumstance. The men burst forth with machine guns, all aimed at Rascal.
Do not fire!
Screamed the toothy president.
It's a chimp, and it's holding a six-pack of beer!
The lead Secret Service agent put up his hands.
Halt!
He screamed to the rest. They did as they were told. That was their job. Unlike back-road warriors, these soldiers were very adept at taking direct orders. The crowd cheered. They could now see for themselves that this wasn't a Russian assassin. It was nothing more than a chimp in a hang glider, clutching a six-pack of beer. And, most amazing of all, the chimp actually seemed to be leveling its hang gliding craft and slowing it down, Whether it was due to Rascal's spastic arm and leg movements or just out of sheer luck couldn't be determined. Rather, it was a very funny sight. The crowd began to laugh. The Secret Service agents soon joined them. And within no time, the president was also laughing. His laugh was annoying, grating, and liberal. Rascal was now coming down for a soft landing, just yards from the mound. A professional hang gliding instructor who was human and male could not have achieved what Rascal was achieving. Smooth, controlled, level, sublime. The crowd began to applaud. But a shot rang out. The Secret Service agents, no longer laughing, suddenly leaped toward the president, shielding the leader of the free world with their bodies, leading him briskly off the field. He appeared stunned.
Did this ever happen to Lincoln?
The baseball players, who'd all been so eager to bound onto the field, now retreated back into their dugouts. They weren't so heroic now. The crowd's attention turned to the chimp who had just fallen with a great thud onto the field.
He's been shot!
Someone screamed.
It's dead!
Yelled another. A security guard ran towards the great beast.
I see a bullet hole!
He yelled, making a desperate motion for the paramedics to move faster. The crowd gasped. Stinker, from high above, asked what they were saying.
Not so sure, good buddy,
replied Boner.
But it don't look good. No good at all.
Down on the field, the security guard ran a finger across his throat to signify, this chimp is dead. The crowd roared its collective disapproval. The Secret Service agents would have joined them, but they were gone. So was the president. All was quiet. And this is when Orville Max III chose to leap onto the field, as if from out of a slit trench, clutching his M16 rifle.
Yeah!
Orville wasn't wearing a shirt. His face was painted green and white. He was wearing a Bungle in the Jungle headband. He was busting it, tiger style. Boo-coo bad. Chapter 40, A Scream.
Orville,
Stinker muttered from his perch high up above.
Orville Max. I haven't seen this tightly strung deviant since 73. We were racing to deliver tainted lunch meat to the same Georgia elementary school in broken refrigerated trucks.
Stinker smiled at the pleasant memory. See, Stinker cannonballs into the ass end of insanity, 1973.
That bastard killed our rascal,
said Boner.
Now I'm going to kill him too, but not just yet.
Well, what are we going to do?
Asked Gwyneth with a girlish tremble in her voice.
We just wait. Sometimes you just got to wait.
How can you possibly be so cool?
Stinker didn't even need to answer. He was that cool. Down below, there was no movement from Rascal. Things weren't looking good. Orville sprinted full speed at the chimp, grabbed the six-pack without checking to see if the animal was even okay, and then ran back toward the dugout, which was now being blocked by the baseball players with their bats. Orville tried the other dugout, which was also blocked. He wasn't going anywhere. Maybe these baseball players were braver than they at first appeared. Not as brave as football players, but certainly a lot braver than soccer players, a game Orville never understood or lacked. Why so popular in Europe? Gay. Orville preferred classic sports, such as nude olive oil wrestling with army buddies. Orville was in a panic. Holding his rifle in his left hand and the six-pack curled beneath his right, he attempted to burst over the small wall that divided the field and the crowd. The crowd stood cross-armed.
You lily-livered leftist ninnies,
screamed Orville. He aimed his M16 straight at a blonde-haired young girl no older than Nate.
Let me in, or I'll shoot her, and I'll do it, too.
There was a scream. And then, thousands of heads turning to look to the mound. Rascal was slowly lifting herself off the ground. She was alive.
But how?
Started Orville, also turning. Up above, Stinker smiled. It was that red down vest he had given the old girl.
Bulletproofed for maximum enjoyment.
It had done the trick, just like Stinker knew it would. As Walter Cronkite might have said just the other day, far out. On the field, Orville cocked his rifle and re-aimed at the young child.
Let me out of here,
he practically spit.
Or I'm gonna shoot this kid, I mean it.
He smiled, and it was chilling.
I've killed children before, over there.
He made a motion with his head to the east, the far east. The crowd parted. Orville leaped into the aisle and disappeared without hesitation into the thrumming throng of thousands of tenacious baseball enthusiasts and their tittering tots. And just like that, this immaculately dressed man with the black carnation was gone, a white apparition in a dense human jungle. Chapter 41. Up, up, and... The president had been brusquely ushered out of the stadium and into his limo. Stinker had failed. There wouldn't be $10,000 to pay for a new trailer toilet. There'd be no $2,000 to have to give to the orphanage, which was good. But that $10,000...
Stinker had failed. Stinker had failed.
Stinker sounded that sentence out in his brain.
Failed. Stinker. Had.
It sounded like another language. Impossible to understand. Stinker had never heard those particular words strung in that order before. Or in any order. He didn't like the sound of it.
But it wasn't all bad, right?
On the upside, he was an international star. Famous throughout the country and the entire world for his heroics and bravery and numerous inappropriate knickknacks lodged in his copious lady tickler. On the downside, he'd still have to urinate out of his kitchen window whenever he was too drunk or jammed up off the reds to leave his trailer. Stinker was kneeling on the field now, holding Rascal ever so gently. The chimp had opened her eyes and had smiled when she first saw Stinker. Her breath was horrific, but Stinker was okay with that. He always was.
Come on, girl,
he said sadly.
Let's get you back in your circus chains, in that shit-smelling truck, and haul your fat ass home to that trailer you hate so much.
It was touching. Stinker and Rascal stood, and the crowd roared its approval. With great difficulty, the chimp put her injured right arm around Stinker's shoulder and was led to the dugout. The players formed a line on either side and placed their caps over their hearts. It was a sign of great respect. The crowd was on its feet, showing Stinker and Rascal just how much they appreciated their great effort, even if they had failed.
Sometimes just trying was enough. It was the American way.
And at least the beast was alive, if horribly maimed. This was no act. This chimp would never again perform somersaults at a circus for the honor of not being whipped by a one-legged trainer with anger issues. Gwyneth stood to the side, weeping, of course. There was even a tear or two in the eyes of Boner. As for Jumbo, he was eating a frozen Swanson turkey dinner with all the sad trimmings. Typical fatty behavior.
It's a shame this didn't work out. Could have made for a hell of an ending.
A great noise could suddenly be heard. At first, Stinker thought it had to be coming from Jumbo, perhaps suffering from yet another heart attack or stroke. He was up to 3 this week. But the noise was coming from above. From a hot air balloon.
What in the...
began Stinker. But Rascal already knew. It was the same hot air balloon that she had ridden earlier. The pilot must have seen her on television and flown straight to her rescue. The balloon landed behind second base with a soft sigh. Rascal cast her yellowed eyes on the pilot, who reached out to once again haul her on board. And then along came Stinker, Gwyneth, Jumbo, and Boner.
Are you sure we'll be safe?
Asked Gwyneth from inside the basket.
We really have no choice,
replied Stinker, a bit perturbed.
Just deal with it.
She really is a lippy broad.
But halfway, so very afraid,
Jumbo said, and everyone laughed.
No, I'm really afraid,
he continued, this time without the fake childish speech impediment. They still laughed. Boner was more confident. It was a confidence emanating straight from Stinker, as well as the two beers he had consumed since hitting the field.
I know what I'm doing,
replied Stinker. Then, to the pilot, Stinker gave the thumbs up. The real one, not the one in his extra-tight jeans. And up they went. Chapter 42. Why, hello there. Mind if I drop in? Orville sped along the beltway that encircled the city of Washington. Seated next to him, in the Cadillac's passenger seat, was the prized six-pack of Schlitz. Orville imagined himself walking straight into Clarence McLeod's office and plunking this treasure onto the old man's fancy veneer work desk like you would the head of a dead enemy soldier. Long ago, Orville had actually done this. Didn't work out like he had hoped. Then again, this was at IRS headquarters, and the head belonged to a neighbor. As far as this fantasy, Orville would pop open a can of fresh brew right in front of Clarence and have himself a relaxing drink. Might even sleep with that big-breasted blondie right there on Clarence's desk, with Clarence watching and Wagner playing with himself. Or the blondie watching and Wagner playing with Orville. Nonetheless, it would be lovely. Lovely wasn't a word Orville used often, except once at a Bangkok back-alley cockfighting parlor named the Horny Moon, and even then under extreme duress. Gun to his pink, knife to his stink. Suddenly, there was a huge bang. At first, Orville thought the car's rear windshield had been blown out. He then realized that the noise was coming not from behind, but from above. Steering with one hand, he leaned his head out the driver's side window and looked up. It was a hot air balloon, resting on his car.
Could this be happening?
It all felt so surreal. He had been so goddamn close to escaping the heavy gravitational pull of his former city. Stinker was standing on top of Orville's car that was moving at 75 mph.
It was a miracle for the ages. Big Red would one day be telling his little red grandpups all about it, complete with fancy engine gestures and elaborate smoke rings. Then, with one seamless move, Stinker was securely inside Orville's car, sitting in the passenger seat, all cool hand juke.
Give me that six-pack, Orville, and nothing happens.
The six-pack was now sitting on Orville's lap.
And if I don't?
And if you don't?
Stinker paused.
Then we all pay the consequences.
Who's we?
This entire country.
Meaning?
Meaning we come from two sides of the same coin. How much is your boss paying you?
My business. That'd be entirely my own damn business.
Our business. Let's say we pool our money and then split it in half. Then we're both happy.
Orville thought about this.
I don't do business with enemies.
And what enemy might that be? A salt of the earther, scraping together a living on crack pavement rather than expensive leather?
What's the matter with leather?
Makes my ass sweaty.
Replied Stinker, grinning. And then, growing more serious,
we've had our differences, right?
Right.
Agreed Orville. Well, at least Stinker was getting somewhere.
Like that time you tried to stop me from carrying crates of donated kidneys out of Six Flags.
Oh, boy. Turns out they weren't donated.
Or kidneys.
Stinker finished. Now it was his turn to giggle. Stinker was on.